This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Matt and Air on Air. My name is Greg Bach. I am your loving and trustworthy co-host, just waiting for Jane Matt and Air to get to us, who I believe is on the phone right now. Jane, are you there?
I am here. How are you?
Technology is awesome.
I love technology so much, and it's always interesting when you're about 3 minutes to go on the air and you can't hear anything.
That's true. But we're working on that right now. But we got you here for now on the phone. Jane, what do we have coming up today? I know we got some great interviews with great people.
Absolutely. We have a jam-packed show coming up after the 10:30 news. James Vanderloo is going to be returning to the show. He's the head of the OEC Group Milwaukee. And we had talked to him before the election because they do a lot of international shipping and tariffs in particular, and he deals firsthand with these things. So James is going to be joining us now that Donald Trump is coming in for a second term, and find out how these potential tariffs are affecting his business and what he's hearing from other business leaders in the community. It is Friday. That means Dan Schaefer will be here from the recombobulation area. And, of course, we'll wrap up the show with This Shouldn't Be a Thing Today. It's a holiday edition of Tisbat. It's the ho-ho-no. The ho-ho-no.
Ho-ho-no.
Ho-ho-no of This Shouldn't Be a Thing. By the way, if you ever have a thing that you think should not be, you want to send it in to Greg and me at Jane Says, J-A-N-E-S-A-Y-S, Jane Says at civicmedia.us. Also, don't forget, today is the last day for our statewide Text to Win contest. Our grown-up gift list contest is underway, so today's your last shot to enter. In the 11 o'clock hour, we will have a keyword to give you. You want to text that in using the Civic Media app, and then you will be up for grabs for either an overnight stay at Chula Vista Resort in Wisconsin Dells or a nice $100 bill right before Christmas. So that is coming up in the 11 o'clock hour. Your next shot at 1 p.m. with Todd Alba, and then 4 p.m. with Dom Salvia. You too could be a winner, like Stephen from Onalaska or Jessica in Cudahy. So be prepared to text that in next hour when we give you the keyword right after the 11 o'clock news. I wanted to start off this morning, though, with something that I found in today's Milwaukee Journal Sentinel from Hope Carnop. Headline reads, Wisconsin voters saw five statewide referendums in 2024. They might see four more in 2025. Here's what they are. So this is going to continue, this endless round of amendments. The article reads, Wisconsin voters saw five statewide referendum questions in 2024, the most in a single year since 1982. Four more could show up on our ballots in just the next 2 years. One would add Wisconsin's voter photo ID law into the state constitution. This is something that I know that the Republicans, and certainly Robin Voss, has been pushing for a long time. Right, Greg?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this voter ID has been one of their major things since Scott Walker got into office, and they've treated it like it's some absolute epidemic of crime. I mean, let's face it. Wisconsin has been thinking elections are stolen since before Donald Trump. We're pretty big pioneers in false information when it comes to our elections and how safe they are. They're very safe. They always have been. This has never been a problem, but hasn't stopped Robin Voss and his group of flunkies from pushing through a voter ID law that is unnecessary and I mean, for me, unwanted. But I know other people think it's, at the very least, saying, well, you know, why not have your ID? Because you don't need to. You do not need your ID. It's not necessary.
Well, apparently it is. Of course, in order to get this onto the to get this change and to even get on the ballot, the same constitutional amendment has to be passed by state lawmakers two sessions in a row. And because the GOP still does hold control of the legislature, they do have the power to put this before voters and decide which election to schedule them. Unlike about half of other states, Wisconsin does not have a process where citizens can initiate their own statewide referendums. Mm-hmm. And even in states where we have seen that happen, we've seen their legislatures go around them anyway.
Yes. Yeah. And this is, for those who are listening right now saying, why is this happening again? And as you do, if you might, you may have forgotten, this year we had three sets of referendums on three different ballots. At least I voted on three. And then the first set earlier in the year went through. The second set in the primary did not. And then we had more go on in the fall. And when they failed in the primary, Robin Voss simply said, not only are we going to keep doing this, we are going to double down on this, and we are going to keep putting referendums on the ballot. So we may see a referendum on every single election we have until they're done with it, because they just feel like if they can't push these things through law, if they can't push them through the floor of the legislature, they're going to backdoor it and put it on the ballot. And in a language that's very confusing, very hard to understand, and we're going to have to talk about it and talk about it and talk about it. And then it still may go through because people aren't, this is not to sound insulting, but aren't paying attention. You have lives. We understand that. There are more important things than voting for a referendum every 6 months. But this is going to keep going, and this is Robin Voss's plan. He had, this is now how he wants to legislate, is through the ballot referendum.
Absolutely. Because they can't get it done on their own, so they find ways to go around it, and it's just endless and kind of exhausting.
Yes.
Quite honestly.
I hate talking about these things all the time.
Well, and you know what I've been thinking, Greg, and I got a really good article from a listener named Steven, and we'll probably talk about this after the first of the year, but you know, there have been all of these postmortems since the election, and there's been some interesting articles, again, about where people get their information. Mm-hmm. And if you don't, there are news deserts. We've talked about this before too. And if you are limited to where you can get your information, you might not have access to accurate information.
Yeah.
And therefore are unaware of these referendums. And we've talked about this many, many times too. The way these things are written are intentionally murky, mm-hmm, and can often be written in a way that makes it sound like, hey, this sounds like a good thing, when in actuality, it is working against our own interests.
Yeah, and something that Deb Krommiller from the League of Women Voters Wisconsin said earlier this year that I'll never forget is that the amount of referendums that are repealing previous referendums are 1-to-1. The amount on the Constitution of Wisconsin, the amount of referendums on the Constitution of Wisconsin repealing old referendums or ballot measures or amendments is 1-to-1. That's how they do that here. That's not a normal way to legislate. That's not a normal way to conduct business. And if your bill can't go through, try again, rewrite it, collaborate, see what you can do. If it's dead, then it's dead. Move on. But this thing of like, we didn't win, so we're going to do it this way, haha, that's not how you work. And that's just how the GOP has done it since Scott Walker walked through the door in 2010.
And we're seeing it being copied by other Republican legislatures around the country now too, because they're doing the same kinds of things. And yet again, even when it does go to the voters and they get these amendments on the ballots that they ask for, then they find a way to crush them or prevent them from getting on the ballot. And they're doing the opposite of what the voters want.
Yeah.
According to this article, again, Robin Voss says he will bring up the voter ID referendum right away.
Yep.
The proposal's authors introduced it December 17th and then asked lawmakers to sign up to co-sponsor it by January 6th. Republicans could also wait and schedule referendums for elections in 2026. Voss said he assumes lawmakers will pass the three other constitutional amendments a second time, but they have not decided yet when they want to get those on the ballot. Assembly Minority Leader Greta Neubauer telling the Journal Sentinel It's entirely possible the GOP will continue using constitutional amendments which don't need Democratic Governor Tony Evers' approval. Neubauer said, we will just need to do what we can to push back against those referendums that move our state backwards. And again, it's going to be getting out the word about what these are going to do and what these actually mean for folks.
Yeah, and honestly, to Representative Neubauer, it's not a possibility. It's going to happen. He said this is going to happen. So expect it. On every single ballot, every time we vote here in Wisconsin, there will be a constitutional amendment. How long will our Constitution be? I mean, this is Bush League, in my opinion. This is like, you can't get your way. So you're doing it in such a sleazy, sleazy maneuver. And he doesn't care. I'm so sick to death of Robin Voss, Jane.
I'm feeling frustration in your voice, Greg Buck.
I just want Christmas now!
State laws already require voters to show photo ID. This referendum will enshrine that in the state constitution because they're concerned about the makeup of the Wisconsin Supreme Court.
Okay. All right. What, do you have to double
and,
win?
And don't forget that. Yeah, well, and that race is coming up very, very soon.
Yep.
That Supreme Court race is going to be here before we know it. That is coming in April. And so expect endless ads starting probably very, very soon, I would imagine.
I imagine January 2, you will start to see ads, I'll bet you. Next week. Two weeks.
We are going to go to break, and then when we return, trouble in the house. Oh, boy. Should we just shut down the government and go home? You're listening to Matt Nair on air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
And she starts to cry. She takes a swing, man. She can't hurt. She don't mean no harm. She just don't know what else to do about it.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Hear us now.
Okay, we're going live.
Good morning. Welcome to Matt Nair on air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Mock, and Sweet Cal B coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us. You can call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Don't forget next hour. It is our last hour of the statewide text to win grown-up gift list contest. Right after the 11 o'clock news, we'll have a keyword for you. You want to text that keyword using the Civic Media app. So if you haven't downloaded the app yet, you still have time. Text the word using the Civic Media app to whatever station you're listening to around the network, and you will be in the running either for an overnight stay at Chula Vista Resort in Wisconsin Dells or $100 cash, which would probably come in pretty handy for Christmas, which is just 5 days away. Just 5 days away.
Oh, boy.
Are you ready?
I'm mostly ready. Tomorrow. I finish it all tomorrow.
Well done.
Thank you. Then I got a wrap.
Well, Christmas, I don't know what's going to happen in Washington, D.C. This is the latest I've seen. House GOP searches for new plan as government shutdown nears. Republicans revolted against a bipartisan bill. Then the House rejected a party line alternative. And the shutdown is just a few hours away. It seems like we're always here.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm looking at a clock on CNN right now. It's got the countdown to the shutdown again. This is what happens.
Well, and then they're going to go home for 16 days.
Are they going to, or are they going to have to stay and get something? I mean, because I feel like the GOP has been, we're telling each other, no, we're not going home. And these guys are like really upset because they were supposed to be home already. So, I mean, they're going to get paid. They're going to get paid. What do they care? What do they care?
Well, exactly. Yeah, they're going to continue to get paid because they always do. And yet all these other federal workers, including air traffic controllers,
mm-hmm.
all the TSA agents,
yeah,
they're all going to have to come in and work without pay. Granted, when this has happened in the past, they get paid retroactively.
Yeah.
But still, folks need paychecks. And there is no guarantee for how, you know, maybe it'll only last a couple hours. Maybe it'll last a month.
I don't care if it lasts 30 seconds or 30 days or 30 years. When the government shuts down, that's due to a lack of ability for Congress to get their stuff together. And the GOP, especially, they're falling apart from within. Like, it is not good what we're watching. And if it wasn't a country I'm living in and paying taxes, I'd be like, this is great. Sorry, cough there. But still, I mean, honestly, this is embarrassing. We've shut down how many times in the past 10 years?
Mike Johnson says, of course, Mike Johnson, Speaker of the House, says, oh, we're gonna come up with something. We're going to come up with a great deal. We'll still get it done. He's still got time, but whether or not this is going to happen remains to be seen. And now I'm seeing all this talk about Donald Trump wants to suspend the debt ceiling until 2029.
Which the GOP doesn't want to do.
This is something that I understand some Democrats have been pushing for a while, but all the deficit hawks in Washington have been screaming about this.
Yeah, this is also something that's very much dividing the GOP. And like, there's certain sections of the GOP and the Democrats who are working together and agreeing, and other parts of the GOP saying we got to do this now. And it is an absolute poop show. There it is, FCC. You're welcome.
Nice
You're welcome.
Catch there.
There it is. But yeah, I mean, this is like right before Christmas, most of them want to be home. They should have been home a while ago. And we're just sitting here waiting. It didn't get fixed last night. And honestly, if they do another continuing resolution, fine, kick it down the road for 45 more days or 90 days or however long you want to do it. But this is an inherent problem that this Congress has had, the inability to get anything done. So they say, you know what, can we just get an extension on our paper, please? Meanwhile, we all have to go to work and live productive lives. Like, I can't go to I got things I got to do for this company before the end of the year. I can't be like, can I do it later? I just don't feel like doing it right now.
Well, and what makes it even worse, I think, is that, of course, members of Congress, they do get to get paid.
Yes. Yep.
Oh. And many of them could probably go without getting a couple paychecks, and I think they'd be just fine.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I think that, but the problem is right there, Jane. Some of those elected officials are so rich that they don't ever have to get this congressional or senatorial paycheck. It doesn't matter to them. But there's no way in which they would have to, and when I say hurt, I don't mean anything other than like, feel the pain of a regular American trying to make money for groceries, trying to make money for gas, trying to make money for our kids. There's no way they can identify with that. So there's nothing we can do as a people. We can't suspend their jobs. They'll go buy an island and live there for the rest of their lives. They are the ones who have our collective futures in their hands, and that's unfair in my opinion because they can't get anything done, and they are apparently adults.
Well, again, we talked about this most of last year, that they are the least effective Congress in probably history. They are great at accomplishing nothing. And what was in this this bipartisan deal included lots of money for relief money for Western North Carolina, which is still reeling from those that hurricane. Mm-hmm. And there was also a big chunk of money for pediatric pediatric cancer research.
Yep.
And so they pulled that out too. It's immensely frustrating. We'll keep an eye on it and see if Mike Johnson actually manages somehow to cobble a deal together. We will find out over the next couple of hours.
And keep his job.
And oh, he's out.
Dude. Marjorie Taylor Greene wants Elon Musk to be Speaker of the House.
Several people want Elon Musk, yeah, to be. I know. It's amazing. All right. News is coming up next. And then when we return, we're going to talk tariffs with James Vanderloo. Stay with us. You are listening to Matt Nair on air on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. My name is Greg Bach. I am sitting in until Jane Matt Nair returns to us. We are having some technical difficulties, but rest assured, she is here. She is aware. She's watching me right now, but we're going to take over for a little bit here and bring you to our guest. But before we do that, remember, we want to hear from you. Don't forget to give us a call, 855-752-4842. 855-75-CIVIC is the number if you want to join the show. You can always leave also a comment on the live stream or give us a text. And then also at 11:06, we do have our final entry, Matt Nair on Air's final entry into the text to win grown-up gift contest that goes statewide. We will give you that keyword, and you are going to download the Civic Media app. Text us that keyword, and we will get your entry in there. And in the next hour, we'll tell you how to possibly get a bonus entry into that contest. But for right now, we have coming back to our show. He was here about a month and a half ago. He's the head at OEC Group Milwaukee. James Vanderloo, welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. How are you doing today, friend?
Greg, I'm doing wonderfully today. And hey, these technical difficulties are supposed to happen last week on Friday the 13th, not today. So.
Which just furthers my proof that Friday the 13th, we pay a little too much attention to that day, if you ask me.
I think you're right.
The whole thing is now Friday the 20th. We're going to go Friday the 20th. James, the last time we had you here, we were talking about tariffs. But before we do that now in a post-election America, tell us what you at OEC Group Milwaukee does do with regards to and how tariffs affect you.
So we handle basically everything in the importing or exporting process. We are a service to service business. So we service a lot of businesses here who might not have the resources, the size, the accountability to go out and negotiate contracts and rates on their own. We handle the customs brokerage, making sure people are compliant. So really everything that is involved in either the importing or the exporting process, OEC has a hand in. And whereas tariffs affect us is where it affects obviously a lot of our clients. And it's about educating our clients for things, helping them get ahead mm-hmm. of these kinds of things before the costs hit, and just kind of strategizing to find the best ways, help with alternate sources. different things like that. So it's definitely something that we're looking at every single day. And to be frank, we've been preparing for this since the first Trump administration. And so now we're a little bit more experienced, and we're definitely using that to our advantage to help people out.
Well, I want to actually keep a question going into the past as well, which is during the first Trump administration, there were the tariffs that started a trade. They called it a trade war. I feel like I'm not educated enough to call it a trade war, but there was definite panic. There were tariffs being risen, and they haven't gone down in the Biden administration. Were you surprised by that back then, or were you expecting such a reaction to the higher tariffs?
You're right. I kind of prefer the term trade battle royale right now, because it's a little less dire. But
yeah,
to be frank, we knew that there would be some type of tariffs regardless of who won. And it really specifically towards China. There seems to be some bipartisan support against some of their unfair trade practices and things like that. However, I think what you're seeing now is what we talked about a little bit when I came on last time. Is what you're seeing is sort of that initial uncertainty and that sort of panic in the market right now, because a lot of people are, trying to get ahead of this. They don't really know quite exactly what's going to happen, and that's causing an uptick in both imports coming in right now and also kind of fears of what's going to happen. I think what a lot of people were surprised by was with the recent suggestion that there was going to be a 25% tariff on Mexico and a 25% tariff on Canada. And I think that's really kind of what's gotten people a little bit more up in arms than maybe the China. We were expecting it probably from China regardless, but some of these new tariffs and who knows what else is to come. We still hear 10% from around the world. We're hearing other tariffs from other places. So definitely a lot of small businesses and different kind of businesses are definitely, kind of clamoring right now.
Well, what's going to go on. 10%, 25% is one thing, but when he's throwing around 1,000, 2,000% type of things, what did you hear from your clients after Trump was elected? Was it like an immediate phone call that Wednesday morning saying, all right, press the lever, we got to go? What was the reaction?
So, well, that was the thing, is there's been a lot of people that had been moving their production or moving their manufacturing from China to Mexico, and they've been in the process of doing that over the last few years. And now they're going, well, what do I do now? Now that there's this new tariff coming up here, especially if you're in the automotive industry, especially if you're kind of, in those kind of industries, you're definitely kind of going to be scrambling a little bit more. So yeah, it was a lot of calls, a lot of, hey, what should we do? Do you know of any other, do you know of alternate sources in India? Do you know of alternate sources in Thailand, Vietnam, those kind of places? And it's just people just looking for some stability and some clarification on what exactly is going to happen. Businesses don't like uncertainty, and that's been the main driver of the last couple months of just people not really knowing what's about to happen.
Well, businesses don't like uncertainty. I feel like what happened, and this is my opinion, I'm not expecting you to agree or disagree, James, but I feel like we voted in the most unstable version of like there's no stability in his actions, and that is bad for business. And I'm sure those businesses thought, okay, well, let's get out of China, let's go to Mexico, let's go to India, what you were just saying. But he's now throwing them at all these different countries, including China. Why do you think he wants to all of a sudden impose tariffs on a country he would like to make apparently the 51st state?
Well, yeah, for Canada, it's it's definitely an interesting one. What I think that really is you got to look at it two different ways. With China, he wants manufacturing to completely shift from that. With Canada and Mexico, it's a little bit different because the U.S. MCA, which is some people call NAFTA 2, is up for negotiation during his second term. So it's up in a couple of years. So I think he's pushing that forward, asking that to be negotiated. Additionally, I've been reading in the news that basically the Trudeau administration doesn't seem to be like it's going to be there for too much longer. Mm-hmm. So you have a new party in power of that negotiating that kind of thing. But I think to be honest, I think it's really just trying to push that deadline up a little bit and get that renegotiated. Additionally, he's tying that to the flow of fentanyl and in the case of Mexico, migration. So those two things are being tied into it, which is definitely, complicates the matter. But it also kind of, for his policy administration, it kind of is a two birds with one stone kind of approach.
If you're just tuning in, we're talking to James Vanderloo, who is the head at OEC Group Milwaukee. And we're talking about tariffs, and they're being imposed upon businesses. And now with the new incoming Trump administration coming back, the new tariffs he has threatened to impose of various degrees at various countries. You know, one of the other things that you just mentioned, you know, he's using immigration and fentanyl too. Businesses don't want to be, and please correct me if I'm wrong, these businesses that you work with don't, while they're trying to get their things done, want to have a conversation about fentanyl and immigration. They want to just make sure their businesses are stable using these tariffs with such a, so I don't know how to say it properly, like a social thing of immigration and drugs. That doesn't help their situation either. Am I correct or no? They just want to, if they have to move, they have to move.
Their businesses are complicated enough. They've got enough problems. Just, I mean, and just even transporting from Mexico is a bit of a hassle with obviously cartels and different things like that. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's definitely something that is being put upon them versus them like being a part of the conversation or anything like that. What I like to even point out even more is this: what this particularly affects is small businesses. They just don't have the resources. It's harder for them to pass on these costs to their customers to stay competitive against big box stores. And so, you know, I think that's something that doesn't get really talked about a lot is like the plight of the small businessman, which, I mean, they've got enough things going on. They're going to have increased costs. They're always the last ones to try to be able to pass on prices. And they have a little less resilient supply chains because think about it. If you've been working with a factory in China or you've been working with someone for, you know, years, you've been building up this company as a family company, and you're kind of like at the maybe the twilight of your career, and all of a sudden you have to find somewhere else to go, and all of a sudden you have to make a new friend in a completely different part of the world. It's a lot harder for those small businesses to be able to make those adjustments and then not have to suffer a huge brunt of the tariff and the increased costs that go along with the increased increased demand that's coming right now. Additionally, we're looking at a potential port strike on the East Coast. And, you know, that could be something that also affects all of this and drives up the demand and cost even more.
So it sounds like what you're saying to me, especially with the small business aspect, because we always hear politicians talk about how much the small businesses are the backbone of our country, which I don't disagree with, but these tariffs could actually crush small businesses. And in turn, like what kind of price hikes would consumers see coming off of that as well for those small businesses trying to survive those tariffs?
And it really depends on the industry. If you're looking at, automotive or, electronics or various things like that, so what they basically think is that, the China itself with just the tariffs, assuming there's no retaliatory action, that's an extra $1,000 for every man, woman, and child in terms of the cost of living. And if you look at it, if you add that onto the Mexico-Canada, and again, this is assuming no retaliatory tariffs, that's an additional $1,500 per man, woman, and child in the United States. So you're nearing $3,000, and you're actually already seeing some retaliatory things come from Mexico-Canada. They've made it, without going into too much detail, because I know that'll bore some of your listeners, but Mexico is also making it more difficult to manufacture and then re-export up here, and they're making it. There's some retaliation going on already, and I know that obviously Trudeau had mentioned the same thing in Canada. China will do something most likely to hurt farmers in sort of the short term if there's any kind of tariff. So it goes with that initial cost. It obviously is going to make things a lot more expensive for the business, for the mm-hmm. consumer. They have to pass that on, but it's also going to have far-reaching implications into other industries and other sectors as well.
You know, that's something that We've talked a lot about tariffs on the show and just in general in the news, is the fact that, when we impose tariffs of a sort, the country does not do the paying. The consumer does the paying. I've never talked about is just the fact that these countries can have retaliatory tariffs themselves. They can take action that makes it even harder for the business and the consumer.
Yes, that's definitely what you're going to see kind of coming up here. We think about it as just, the Trump tariffs or things like that, but we don't really talk a lot about what the other countries are able to do. And I think, there's going to be a lot of discussions about all of this. It's going to take a long time to do it. Really, the problem is that a lot of we've done the punitive part, we've established the tariffs, but I don't really hear the plan to reestablish the infrastructure, reestablish the industrial footprint to sort of counterbalance that and to make that happen. You know, is the tariff money going to go to incentivize manufacturers here to produce more? How does that all work out? We don't have a blueprint. We don't have a game plan to do this. So again, by their own admission, the Trump administration has said, you know, basically short-term pains for long-term gains, but not really explained how that's, you know, how long is the short-term pain and what is the long-term gain at the end of the day?
Well, if you listen to someone like Elon Musk, who apparently is the shadow chief of staff or whatever you want to call him at this point, just, you know, Donald's best friend, he has said that we have to adjust ourselves for, I think, about 2 years of pain, and then it'll be glorious. It'll be glorious. And don't worry about boring us, James. We love hearing you talk about this stuff. Truly, that's why we had you on the show. And I want to talk more about that plan from your point of view. We're going to take a quick commercial break. But when we come back, I want to talk more about that plan in a perfect world where there would be a plan using those tariffs to bring manufacturing back to America. What does that take? And how much harder is it than we think? Because we just think, bring it all back. It's here. That's not what it is. There's much more that goes into it. But we're going to keep the conversation going with James Vanderloo. He is the head at OEC Group of Milwaukee. He's joining us this for the rest of the half hour. Don't go anywhere. You are listening to Matt and Air on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Good morning. And welcome to Matt Mayer on Air. Jane Matt Mayer, Greg Bach, and Sweet Cal B coming to you from our home at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us. You can call. You can text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Don't forget, today is the final day of our statewide Text to Win grown-up gift list contest. After the 11 o'clock news, we will have the keyword for you to text in via the Civic Media app, playing next hour either for an overnight stay at Chula Vista Resort in Wisconsin Dells or a $100 in cash. So if you don't have the Civic Media app yet, download it now. Go to wherever you get your apps. Look for Civic, C-I-V-I-C, Civic Media. Download the app and you will be all ready to go next hour. Everyone who enters, even if you don't win an hourly prize, is also in the running for one of 8 grand prizes. So download the Civic Media app and get ready for the keyword coming your way right after the 11 o'clock news. We are joined by James Vanderloo. He's the head of the OEC group in Milwaukee. And James, we've been talking about tariffs and what you're hearing from your clients as we wait for the second Trump administration to come in. And I think everyone agrees that bringing manufacturing back to America is a wonderful idea, but it's not like that happens in a week. This can take years, correct?
Yes, and there's a couple of things working against this. So if you look at the example of like the microchips or the semiconductors that we're trying to bring back, that takes at least 10 years to bring back that industrial footprint. Additionally, there's things that just frankly, the United States, the Canadian and the Mexico labor forces we just are too advanced to do a lot of the manufacturing that's done over China. So it just doesn't make sense to bring over a lot of that manufacturing. And then there is some manufacturing that could be done relatively quickly within a couple of years. But that's like, you know, cobalt refinery, you know, turning, you know, metal into aluminum. And that's just dirty at work, and it's hard work, and it's just not great for the environment. And so it's like, do you want those businesses kind of coming back? Do you want that type of manufacturing and infrastructure coming back? A lot of this could, you know, take beyond 4 or 5 years, and in which case, you know, I mean, you could theoretically, if this isn't a popular thing, you could theoretically have a different president, you could have a different regime change. So it takes a lot of time for these things to happen, and it does not happen overnight. And I think last time these tariffs went in, really all that happened was is foreign companies like Samsung and others, you know, they just set up manufacturing shops here. So it didn't really have the desired effect. Not saying that this, you know, the second administration might embolden, you know, the Trump administration to do more drastic measures, but it hasn't really had the desired effect as of yet.
Well, that's really interesting. I had never even considered that there are things that we import that come from businesses that are, as you said, very environmentally dirty.
Yes, and like I said, it's cold.
Do we want that back?
You know, that's I guess that's a question for all of us to sort of decide. And again, you know, I mean, it's, you know, we let the Chinese do it. We let them sort of, you know, let their workers do it for, you know, pennies on the dollar. You know, that's like I said, it's not great jobs. That's not what I think people are thinking about when they're thinking of like a strong blue collar manufacturing job. But those are the things that, you know, could conceivably come back, making batteries here, things like that. I mean, there's definitely a demand for it, obviously, as electric vehicles and things become more, you know, more prevalent. But, you know, they're very hazardous materials. There's things like that that we might not want to deal with in the long run. So that's kind of up for us to decide. We don't really know quite what wants to come back and what's able to come back. And then additionally, China has access to rare earth metals and things that we just don't have access to. If we tried to set up shop here and we needed to utilize those rare earth metals, we're going to either have to find a different source because they're certainly not going to give them away without, you know, with us taking their manufacturing away.
Well, and it's so easy to find those materials either. It's not like these are limited resources. These are finite resources. And yeah, China controls most of it already anyway. And I understand too that if Ukraine falls to Russia, because Ukraine has a number of mineral assets as well, from what I understand, then that's all going to be controlled by Vladimir Putin.
And what you don't really want to do is back China and Russia together into a corner and kind of force them to, you know, be best friends. I know they're obviously work together well right now. They've got a rail infrastructure. They do trade. They cooperate militarily. You know, the more you pressure, the fewer options you have. You know, you've lost a trading partner, and that's to say that, you know, I mean, like I said, China's been one of our largest trading partners, along with Mexico, Canada, and we are going and you know, having this confrontation with them. It's definitely going to lead to some volatility, and you just really hope that you know, the cooler heads prevail at the end of the day.
Well, and I guess what I find really frustrating, in particular when we're talking about Mexico, I'm fairly certain that it's already been proven that the vast majority of fentanyl that is being brought into this country is coming in through legal points of entry and is being brought in by American citizens. Not that fentanyl isn't a problem, because it is, but I think telling Mexico that until we stop all the flow of fentanyl that we're going to punish you is not logical.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those things where we don't quite understand what's happening, and we're putting policy things in place. We're making vast assumptions on things that we might not have any idea about.
James Vanderloo is the head of James Vanderloo is the head of OEC Group Milwaukee. Thank you so much, James, for coming back and talking to us. We'd love to have you back in the future. Let us know what's going on. But thank you so much for being here. When we come back, we'll be joined by Dan Schaefer in the recombobulation area. Don't forget, we got the text to win keyword coming up in the next hour. Stay close. You're listening to Matt and Air on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops.
but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.